Thank you for Rabbi Zaitchik for that generous introduction. A good evening to everyone. I thank you all for joining. Allow me to reiterate our thanks to the Klein and Pfeiffer families, as well as to the Levy family for hosting. May you know enormous simcha, joy in your families. One of the delights in the arrangements of putting tonight together was speaking with Rabbi Zaitchik on the phone. I had a particular delight, especially being in the field, appreciating his keen insight as we were choosing topics and talking Torah, standing in the presence, so to speak, over the phone of enormous experience. It was a delightful experience. I hope we'll continue to communicate. It was really a pleasure. The Talmud relates an amazing story about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was all of 18. And the Jewish community, following the destruction of the Second Temple, was in crisis. They needed a leader. There was a terrible fallout. They were looking for a leader. And someone nominated Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah as the next leader. He said, "Eizo ve'imlech ve'inche vesi. I have to go home and get advice. What should I do?" He comes home. And he asks his wife what to do. Should I take the position as prince of the Jewish people or not? And his wife tells him, it's not going to work. You don't have any white hairs. He goes to sleep that night. And when he wakes up in the morning, he has a lot of white hair. There's no question in my mind that this is the first documented instance where a husband got white hair from something his wife said. She said, "You're too young." He comes back the next morning and he accepts the position as prince because he looks the part. Most people understand that story that he was asking advice from his wife. His wife knows him well, soulmates. He's asking advice. I'd like to suggest that he was not asking advice. He was asking permission. And his wife, in her wisdom, identified the critical point with which he could make his decision. The rabbis recognized Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's greatness. They understood that he was leader material. And he was a scholar. And at 18, they were willing to nominate him. But his wife realized, what about the ordinary Jew on the street who doesn't understand my husband's greatness? What's going to be? He's going to show leadership. He's going to oppose people. He's going to lay down the law. And he's going to have a lot of stress from it, from people who don't want to listen and don't respect him. And where's all that stress going to go? It's going to come home to the Jewish home. And it's going to eat away at everything that we're building. And she said, "You can't take the job. Because it would violate the partnership that I have with you." And that partnership is called the us. Building the eternal Jewish home. And she said no, unless the condition could be met that even the ordinary Jew will appreciate you. There's a famous illustration of what we expect in a proper Jewish home. Ish and Isha. Husband and wife. Our tradition is Zachu, if they merit it, Shechina Beinehem. The dominant presence is the Yud with the Hey, Hashem's name. The Imlav, but if they don't merit it, they both have Eish, fire. If they don't merit God in their relationship, then all they have is passion. And it's not eternal. It's not going to last. The great Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, great rabbi in Jerusalem, when he walked into his home, he would first make his coat neat. So his students used to ask him, are you expecting someone? Is someone waiting for you? He said, yeah, God's waiting for me. Because if you have a relationship 60 years and you build it properly, so then God's waiting for me. And you walk in with that perspective. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's wife understood even at a young age that that's what she was building with her husband. And she told him, don't do anything that's going to violate what we're building together. I'd like to explore this concept with you this evening, laying the foundation for the successful Jewish home. And the way I'd like to do it is by culling from some of the great ethical wills that were written by great Jews at different times during history. Notably, the Ramban, the great Nachmanides, lived in the 1200s. You're probably familiar with his story. The church imposed upon him the responsibility to debate with a Christian clergyman. And the Ramban, in his greatness, made the mistake of winning the debate. So he was asked to leave Spain. So he went. He went to Israel. And he wrote to his son a letter, which we have, which he recommends that his son should read once a week. It'll keep you in good shape. And he promises, I don't know how old his son was, but you always have to have a lollipop. He promises that on the day that you read the letter, on that day, God will listen to your prayers. Guarantees. We're all children of the Ramban. Lots of people. Try it. It's a very powerful letter. And we'll cull from some of the things that he mentions. Another great letter I'd like to focus on is the letter of the Vilna Gaon. The Gaon of Vilna was under the impression that he also was going to Israel. He left his family. He started on the trip. He never made it. He came back. But while he was away, and while he thought that he was traveling, he wrote his wife a letter. And he poured on paper everything that a Jewish home is supposed to be. After I read that letter, I thought, that's Hashem's hand. That he tricked the Vilna Gaon into thinking that he was leaving his family so that he should write the letter so we can have the letter. But it's another great letter that we'll cull from tonight. One more perspective before we begin. grow up in the school system. And it puts us at a disadvantage. Because we tend to think that someone's going to judge us. Which may be true. It is true. But it's a poor perspective sometimes. We grow up thinking our parents are going to judge us, the teacher's going to judge us, the principal's going to judge us. And if we're mature, as we get older, so God's going to judge us. That's all great. But there's something much more dynamic. And that's what I call self-dating. Date yourself. See if you yourself are the kind of person that you want to be. The Gemara tells us that a person can be judged in three ways, and likewise we can judge ourselves by these three ways. Koso. What's koso?
Anger.
Louder.
It's anger.
Wine.
Glass.
Yeah, we're going in order though. His cup. The next one that was mentioned was ka'aso, good. Anger. Anybody know the middle one? Good. Kiso. How he spends his money. V'yesh omrim, the Gemara continues, and says there's one more that some people add in, and that is safko, what he laughs at, what he thinks is entertaining. Most people say that the reason a person is judged by his cup, it's referring to his cup of wine, based on the famous Gemara, nichnas yayin yotza sod, wine goes in, the secrets come out. That's, by the way, why I don't drink on Purim. A person can be judged by his cup. I'd like to suggest a different interpretation. A person can be judged by what he's willing to make a l'chaim to. What does he think is valuable in the world? We have that expression, I'll drink to that. That's the way we talk. And this is what we mean. The Stipler, great Torah leader in Israel, passed away in the 80s. So he used to be honored very often with being a sandik, to hold a baby during the circumcision. So there's a tradition that the person who's sandik becomes wealthy. So someone once came over to the Stipler and asked, you've been tzaddik so many times, why don't you become wealthy? You're still living in your same small apartment. What happened to the tradition? And the Stipler answered, when we say wealth, it depends on the person. It depends what he values. To me, what's valuable is that my Torah writing should be accepted in the Torah world. And on that, he was gifted. There isn't a yeshiva in the world without the Stipler's Sfar. What do you value? And when we self-date, we want to make sure that the things that we value, we are in fact investing in. Kiso. How does a person spend their money? You're supposed to save money, right? You're not supposed to spend it. Save it. But in Judaism, we have a powerful perspective. The function of money is to lubricate your way into the world to come. Spend it well. Spend it strategically. And mitzvahs are not limited to charity. Many, many mitzvahs. But spend it well. Kaso. What irks a person? What gets him angry? There's a horrendous nursery rhyme, which you may recall. You must teach your child before it's too late, before they are 6, 7, or 8, to hate the people that their parents hate. What's the Jewish perspective on that? Are we looking to bequeath anger from generation to generation? There's a beautiful trend in the Jewish world today. It's called Bayis Shel Bracha, a house of blessing. What's a house of blessing? A house where they say blessings out loud. Person's ready to bite into an apple. So even those who are careful to make a blessing, you recite the bracha, but we mumble it under our breath as if we're embarrassed of something. Say it loudly. Declare it. Let the children see, I'm a thankful person. I'm a happy person. I'm not an angry person like the nursery rhyme. Be thankful. And finally, sochko. What is it that a person enjoys? What makes him laugh? How does he spend his recreation time? And you can get an indication of the person. By self-dating, we can judge ourselves.